Hello and welcome to this episode. I am your host, Brad, and this is Better Vibes, all your hints and tips about better fish. And we will get into other fish in time as well. But for the moment, let's stick to better fish. And this week, we're continuing on with our series, and we're going to get into breeding of the betters. We've already looked at the genetics, health issues, feeding and tank setup, but now we're going to have a little swim in the shallow end today of how to breed. So grab a coffee, let's kick back, relax together, and learn about breeding these great and magnificent colored and finned fish. How does it all happen? Well, I think it's actually one of the most spectacular breeding processes out of all fish that I've encountered so far. The way that they intertwine, it is a little scary the first time you see it happen, as the female does go pretty much limp, looks almost dead because she's in such a relaxed state when it does all come together. So she can release the eggs correctly. Well and truly, there's a lot of things that we need to look at. Before we start breeding our fish, we need to know how we're going to move on all our new friends. They have up to 300 fry in any given spawn. So that's a lot of fish, and if you've only got one aquarium store locally, they probably won't be able to take 300 fish over the next 3 to 6 months. So you need somewhere to house them. Apart from that, you need large tanks to grow them out. I run with 2 4-foot tanks for my grow-outs. As the males get aggressive, I then have to separate them, and that's when they usually go on to new homes. But that is something else, another episode, but you must be prepared for all of it. Grow outs, the works. But before we get to that, that is number one, preparation, okay? And part of our preparation as well is also conditioning our fish and making sure that they're in good health to start off with. So how do I mean good health? They've got great vibrant colours. There's no damage to their fins. There's no lesions. There's no abnormal lumps. And they have a good temperament. Probably the biggest thing about breeding the fish these days is that you don't want to breed overly aggressive fish, because those inherent traits go on to the fry. Not all of them, but some of them. So if we can reduce down the amount that we breed the aggressive fish, the more placid that they will become over generations, which I would love to see them get back to their more wild types. They're always going to be fairly aggressive in the sense that they're territorial, but they have been bred for fighting as such for such a long time that it does change their attitude. So we're going to make sure that they are suitable. We also, before we start conditioning them up, I personally like to treat my fish. And when I say treat my fish, I will give them just a methylated blue bath, which you can pick up from any aquarium shop. And I give them their bath to start off with, make sure that there's nothing in there. It seems to boost them up a bit. You can do this with aquarium salts as well. This is very good to help them along their journey, okay? And it just makes sure that they're in top conditions. Now, the fun part. We go into conditioning our fish. High-protein foods, bloodworms, not every day. Every couple of days, give them a couple of bloodworms, or if you're feeding twice a day, you could have one feed of bloodworms or brine shrimp, and then one feed of high fiber food as well. Because the more protein we have, the more that we need to add in some fiber and things like that to make sure that they don't get bloat or any digestive issues, and we want to not fatten them up. We want to make sure that they are as healthy as possible, okay? And I'll do a blog post to this as well, guys, so don't keep that in mind that we'll do a blog post. And how long you condition the pair. I've jumped ahead of myself, as always. Conditioning the pair is not just feeding them. Conditioning the pair, in my mind as well, is introducing them. That is probably the hardest part of everything. This can take anywhere from 1 day, 1 week to 3 months. It is not a quick process, and I find the longer you take to do it, the better it is in the outcome myself. That's from my personal experience. I'm sure there's plenty of guys out there who will disagree, and the way that they do it in some other countries will be a lot different. But this is the way that I do it. I usually take at least a month, if not up to 3 months, to condition the pair together. How do I start that? For the first couple of days to a week, I will introduce them for 1 to 2 hours, separate containers outside of the breeding tank. So the male is already in the breeding tank. And I've already jumped ahead, and I should be talking about the tank setup. But to start off with, let's just condition them and get them right, because we can always transfer the male over later into the breeding tank. So for the first week, 1 to 2 hours every day, they can visually see each other, but they're in separate containers, or one of them is in a container outside of the spawning tank. The next week, so week two, I usually increase that to 2 to 4 hours, and then week three, 3 to 6 hours, week four. And as you can tell, this is a very slow process for myself. By week four, I will have them usually up to fully 24 hours in separate containers. So when I say separate containers, this could be a pure glass vase for the female inside the breeding tank. So that their water is not mixing together, they are separated, but they can completely see each other, and they are safe from each other, because at any point along this journey, they could attack each other, unfortunately. The most important thing to do here is maintaining water quality for the fish that is usually in the containers. So daily water changes. When I mean a water change, I usually have my large tanks. I will take a new container of water, and I will change it completely so that they're not sitting in their own filth every single day. And I'll have two of them, so I can change it out and make sure that I can clean in between and sterilize if I need to. All right. And you get up to a point where they're visually seeing each other for 24 hours. He's not bashing up against the side of the glass or anything, trying to attack her or anything like that. He's just flaring at her. Now, flaring is a completely natural part of how these guys introduce themselves to the girls. They are basically pumping their muscles up and saying, I am the biggest, I am the best, and I am the most beautiful at this point. All right? So don't think that flaring means aggression. It doesn't always mean aggression. Sometimes it can. So it's a little visual, keep an eye on things and make sure that he's not hitting the glass or anything like that, okay? Now, after we've had him in there for up to 4 weeks, sometimes it might take longer, but generally by this stage, if they're okay, he's not being too aggressive towards her, and she's been receptive to him as well, she will generally start changing coloration a little bit. She will get her visual stripes. These are vertical stripes, if I remember correctly. They go front to back, not up and down, I think. I could have that back to front. Anyway, they will get stripes on it. If you Google it, you'll find it. I always forget, and then I see him and go, ah, that's what it was. All right. And she'll also start holding an est position towards the male. If you sit there and watch him and just sit back, watch him from a distance, you will see it. Now, this is an idealistic time that we now move her from a separate container I usually use something like a plastic breeding box that sits inside the water, because then she's still safe from him, but she's getting the water circulated around and their pheromones mixed together. Yes, it happens. So that, you know, and that process there of having her inside the box, inside the tank, sorry, in the breeding box, can take another couple of weeks depending on how they're going along. So we're still feeding twice a day, sometimes three times a day if you can, making sure that they're in good, healthy condition. We're keeping an eye on them, that they're not getting torn fins, they're not attacking themselves, they're not creating lesions or anything like that. There's good coloration. They should get a bit more vibrant with each other being around, okay? And the girl is starting to get those stripes. Now, what else is happening at this process is that the male should be building a bubble nest at some point. Along this process, he'll start building a bubble nest. And now this, if he hasn't already preemptively, before you start selective breeding, started building a bubble nest, because in captivity, it's not seasonal. We can set everything so that we can predict when they're going to have fry, which is great, but it does mean that, yeah, sometimes we miss out on those key indicators as well. So keep an eye out for a bubble nest. Bubble nest in a male generally means that he's extremely happy if he's just in a tank by himself. It's a great sign of happiness for your male betters. Now, once he builds that bubble nest, that is idealistic. All right, so now we should already have our breeding tank set up. What is our breeding tank? Our breeding tank is a conditioned tank. It has to be aged. We can't just, you know, throw water into a tank and expect them to breed. No, no. What I have in my tanks and what I recommend everybody to do is have a minimum of a 20-litre tank up to a 40-litre. I personally use 20 litres. I like the size. They're easy to handle. And when I need to get fry out in the long run, they're great. I also recommend, at this point, a rimless 20-litre tank. Why a rimless 20-litre tank? Well, at some point, you possibly could have to pour them fry out of there, because it's a lot easier and safer for them to be poured than what it is to be able to scoop them all out. A lot less stressful for them. And if you've got a tank with a rim on it, it's going to interrupt and not be the best way of getting them out. All right, so we've got a 20-litre tank. We need to have a bare bottom. I do not recommend ever having gravel, sand, soil, aqua soil, or anything like that on the bottom of your breeding tank. A, it's hard for the male to pick up the eggs. B, it is very hard to keep clean when you've got potentially 300 fry in this 20-litre container for the first couple of weeks. It is very hard to keep clean. Trying to keep fry out of a siphon is hard enough. Adding gravel or something like that in there would be a nightmare. So we don't want to have that. We also want to make sure that we have live plants. Once again, hornwort, just like our last episode and the episode before that, hornwort is what, like, my ultimate favorite friend here. It is great and quick growing, so it removes all those nitrates from in the water. It also hides, it gives the female somewhere to hide, and it is good at adding in oxygen during the day as well, okay? So we've got a 20-litre tank. We've got a bare bottom. We have hornwort in there. All right, so the next major important thing is that we want to have a sponge filter. We've got to have some sort of filtration in here. Sponge filter is great because once the fry are in there, they can't be sucked up and go through the filter. So it's safe for fry. Sponge filters are the best filters in the world in my mind. They are simple, they're easy, they're great, but they are safe for fry of all conditions. And eggs, magnificent things, all right? Now, the other thing that we need is somewhere for the female to hide. Apart from in the hornwort, I love to add in rocks and timber, okay? So rocks and timber in there is magnificent. Because then it gives her somewhere to hide away from the male when things are, you know, if things are not going so well as they start introducing to each other in the same tank, they will chase each other around a bit. So we need to give the female somewhere to hide, okay? So I also use terracotta pots. I have half-cut terracotta pots. They're about 10 centimetres. You can get the smaller 5-centimetre pots as well. Now, the next thing that we need is a heater, of course. So we're going to bump the heater up from 24 degrees where we normally have it at most. In between 20 to 24 degrees is idealistic for them normally. When we're breeding, we want to have 27 to 28 degrees Celsius, okay? I do not know Fahrenheit. Please Google it, guys. I live in Australia. We don't do Fahrenheit. It makes no sense to me. So I apologize, but I haven't grown up with it. Doesn't make sense. So 27, 28 degrees Celsius. Okay, guys. Now, on top of that, because they breed in the summer months in their native countries, which are, of course, going to have higher water temperatures, especially when we're talking about a reduced body of water and things like that where they love to breed. Now, the next thing that we're going to need, of course, is our botanicals. Just like in our Better Care, we love botanicals. Now, what can that be? Indian Armony leaves. They're good, but they do sink. Now, banana leaves is one of my favorite ones because you can actually have them come up and create an area that looks safe for the better to for the male to build a bubble nest under. And you can block out some of that light as well and give them somewhere else for the female to dart in and around and kind of make obstacles, okay? So you're probably getting a theme here. We want to create lots of hiding spots, but we also want to have nice brown tannin water because that brown tannin water from the Indian almond leaves, from the banana leaves, from Mongolia leaves, whatever you decide to put in there, that's all antibacterial. So this is going to help you fry in the long run. From the day that they come out as an egg all the way through to when you take them out of that tank, it's going to help them. And on top of that, botanicals is going to be, well, not the botanicals themselves, but what's on the botanicals is going to be the first thing that they will eat, okay, after they eat their egg. All right, so keep that in mind. It's more than just what it normally is. And, of course, we want to have a light. Now, that light, same process as always, about 8 hours a day, and it's very crucial to how to do it. So now, one important thing. We've got a 20-litre tank. You do not want to have this more than half full when the male and female are going to do their breeding dance, okay? And it is a dance. It looks magnificent. It's like watching somebody do the perfect flamingo or tango or whatever the heck you want to watch, right? It is gorgeous. The way that they actually intertwine. And that's where our female has been in there for a while. We've got our bubble nest. Now the most important part is safely introducing them to each other. Oh, before we do that, we also must be keeping an eye on our female and make sure that she's actually bearing eggs. She will fatten up. You might see little lumps across her belly section towards her anal fin there. If it's a crown tail, it can be quite hard to tell because the crown tails do have a different body shape a little bit. But with your half moon plaquettes, half moons, any of the other finnage types, much easier to tell when they are bearing eggs. And not egg-bound, but bearing eggs, okay? Now, as I said earlier, we want to introduce them so that there's not an issue. How do we do that? Well, 10 minutes before your light goes off, the night before you want them to breed, you're going to take the female, after they've had their last evening meal, you're going to take the female out from her container and put her in with the male. He should have a nice substantial bubble nest by this stage, and she will be making her S's towards him, okay? And she should have her breeding lines on her as well. Now, when we introduce them, and why do we introduce them with 10 minutes of light? A, so they can see each other. She can orientate herself around the tank and work out where the hidey spots are. and then the light goes out. Okay, that gives her 10 minutes to find everything and get in touch with her surroundings and then move on. Now, once they've done that, the next day comes along, the light comes on, and within, I wouldn't feed them on this day. From here out, you do not feed the male until you remove him. The female, after the eggs have been laid, you will remove her once they have finished spawning. So once they are happy and they are all good together, they will do their dance, usually somewhere in between 1 to 3 hours, I find, after the light comes on for the day. They will chase each other around a bit. They will work out their bearings. They will do their little thing. And at this point, this is where you've got to be careful and keep an eye out, because this is where they can get a bit fin-nippy and try to take each other out. If you have not taken the time to condition your fish correctly, you will end up with fish with no fins, okay? So you start seeing that. That's a good time to put her back into the breeder box and separate them. All right, don't leave them together until somebody is completely missing a fin. That's just mean, guys. And then the magic happens, and you will see them intertwine. She will release the eggs. There is some fun things that happen the first time the male is in this process, in the sense that he might not know what to do. I've had bettas that eat the eggs as soon as they come out. Free feed, right? Well, there's also another case where he won't do anything. He'll fertilize the eggs and then he'll move on and leave it up to her. Okay. Now, there's also a whole heap of other things that can happen along this. Now, this usually just comes down to inexperience. If you see this, condition them back up, separate them, condition them back up, and then the next week give them another go, okay? Most of those fry, or those eggs, will not actually be fertilized correctly, or they will not be looked after and actually won't survive, unfortunately. So the next thing that will happen is, once we've got our eggs in there, they've done their dance, the female is all done, she will move away and leave the male alone. She'll find the back corner of the tank, usually somewhere away from wherever the bubble nest is, and won't go near it. This is when you must remove the female. Now, if you don't remove the female, that can mean that can lead to the male being territorial, and he will start actually attacking her at this time. Okay? So remove the female. Once again, before I introduce them into the same water together, I do the methyl blue. When I separate the female out, she gets methyl blue. When the male comes out after 3 days after the fry have hatched, he gets methyl blue before they all go back into their original tanks as well. We're trying to stem any infections from going around, okay? So after you separate the female, the male is going to look after the fry after 24 to 48 hours, usually closer to 48 hours for myself, I find, you will have what we call wrigglers. They will be tiny, tiny little worm-looking things with big-ass eyes in comparison to their body, okay? It's just you're basically seeing a see-through fry, and you're looking at their spine and whatnot through their body. It's always creepy, just so you know. But once we've done that, he will then keep making sure, just like after the eggs were hatched, he picks the eggs up and keeps putting them back in bubble nests and looking after them until they're hatched. And then once they're hatched and they're wrigglers, well, then he keeps picking them up and putting them back in so that they don't run away, they don't get eaten by something else, and they're safe, okay? And then they become free swimmers. Now, this will take usually, so they hatch out generally, within 24 hours, another 2 to 3 days after this, so about 3 to 4 days after they've actually done their tango, the fry will become free swimming, and this is the prime time to take the male out. He has not eaten for 4 days. Do not feed the male while there is eggs in there. He will then get hungry and eat the eggs. Okay? This always happens if you feed them while there is eggs in there or fry in there. So before he starts eating the fry because he remembers how hungry he is, we take the male back out and put him in his own tank again. Now, once that is all happened, well, then it's time to look after the fry. Now, we've done the hard part, right? No. You have at least 3 months of looking after these fry and growing these fish out. At least. Sometimes it's 6+ months. Not all fry grow at the same rate. So keep that in mind. You will have some runs of the litter. Okay. Now, what is their first food? So, you should have already started. Oh, sorry. You should not need to feed food to the fry while the male is still in there. But once you've removed the male, now we need to start feeding them. So, when we had our grow-out tank set up, before we started thinking about doing all this, we started researching and looking into actually how to get the rest of our foods. So, what do I feed? Infusoria or green water? Green water is probably the easiest thing ever. Turn a light on a bowl of water for 48 to 72 hours until it completely turns green with aged tank water in it. That's it. You can then add some, well, actually, I usually add some spinach or lettuce in the bottom of it, just blanched to start off with. So once the infusoria start showing up, they've got something to devour and keep breeding and multiply. And, well, sorry, not infusoria, the green water. Or you can feed them yeast once it comes as well. So just baker's yeast. And that is a great first feed for probably the first week. This has microorganisms in there that is small enough for their mouths and can eat. Another great one is, after that, or generally I actually start with a bit of green water and microworms at the same time, or banana worms or vinegar eels. Now, keep an eye out for these. Really easy to culture. Once you're done with them, you can keep that culture going and keep feeding the rest of your fish as well with them. They don't mind them. They are very small. Keep that in mind that they are not very hugely nutritious or filling for them. They are nutritious. They're just not hugely filling. I do mine in powdered mashed potato because there's a lot less smell than oats. Okay. I just use Chinese food containers. And, yeah, you can find all the information on how to do that. Now, the most important thing, by about week one, maybe week two at the latest, we should be starting to feed baby brine shrimp. Now, I don't have fancy baby brine shrimp setups. If you go find a YouTube by the name here in Australia of Finfinity, Nat is the host there. She shows you exactly how to hatch brine shrimp. With that, it is extremely simple. I just have some Coke bottles. I got some lids off Amazon. I run air pumps everywhere. You will have an air pump that's running your tank. It doesn't need much. It's more working out your ratios of water to salt and whatnot. And then you feed them out, okay? Plenty of information. Nat goes through all of that on Finfinity. And keep that in mind, all right? The baby brine shrimp. Now, after a couple of weeks on baby brine shrimp, we can start introducing dry foods and things like that as well. And this is a process. It takes a while for them to get onto normal foods, but always feed at least once a day of brine shrimp until at least 2, if not 3 months old. That's my personal opinion. I just think it gives them the best boost and start to life. All right, so once the male, tank hygiene and water changes. So leading up to the spawning, you've got half a tank of water. It might be half a tank, so only 10 litres, 2 fish. You know, I'd probably do a water change the day before you want them to spawn as well. That's always good. And just making sure that you've got only half the tank. So if you've got a 20-litre tank, only take out 1 or 2 litres and then put 1 or 2 litres back in, so you've only got your 10 litres in there. And then once the fry have hatched and it's passed, probably after the males come out, I usually add in about a litre of water a day from another conditioned tank. I'll just siphon it out or grab a jug, and then I slowly, slowly pour it in. Usually using an airline tube is the best way to do this, with a valve adjuster on it, so you can drip it in over a slow period of time. A, if your water goes cold in the container, it's not going to affect them. And B, you're not rushing water in there and potentially making them get bashed into things. So we don't want to damage our fry. So nice and slow feed in. I'll do that for literally 8 or 9 days until we've got a full tank, okay? After we have a full tank, that's when I usually do my first siphon. They'll be big enough that you'll actually see. And the first siphon is via an airline tube, and we're taking out no more than a litre. We are literally trying to get all the debris off the bottom, as much of it as possible, as quickly as you can without stirring up the water too much, okay? Be very careful that you're not sucking up the fry. We all do it. Keep it in mind. Sometimes a container with a with your fish net in there, so that if you do suck up the fry, you might be able to catch them back a lot easier, but then you'll also have all the debris from the bottom of the tank in there. So sometimes it's easier just to kind of scoop them out after you've let the water settle in your container that you've taken them out of. All right, and then I usually go every 2 to 3 days at absolute most, usually every day, I'll do at least a 1 litre, if not 2 litre, because now we're talking a 5 to 10% water change every day, okay? You don't want to do big changes. You don't want to drop the water temperature down too much. We want to keep that water at 27, 28 degrees still, okay? So small water changes very frequently. Doesn't take a lot of effort. It's easy, okay? And you'll keep the tank clean and your fish will grow out quicker, and we're getting rid of all the dead baby brine shrimp as well that they didn't eat, or any micro worms or anything along those lines. Okay. Now, excuse me. That is a lot of information to take in 32 minutes. I'm just looking at my timer here. Now, there is so much more to this, and as I said, this is a quick deep dive into it, and it's not even a deep dive. This is a shallow, dip your toe into the shallow end of breeding bettas. After you've had them for a couple, after you've spawned your first one, you'll work out that these guys are a challenge. There is a huge amount of upkeep, and there is so many of them. My biggest spawn so far, guys, has only been 180, but they can have 300 plus. I did see a post on a Facebook group there about 6 months ago. A gentleman had 1,000 eggs. What are we going to do with 1,000 fry? I would not have enough tank to look after that, and I have 16 aquariums so far. The last thing that you ever want to do during a breeding process is be rushing around trying to get things, because when you will need it, it will be closed. Okay, those shops that you need to get whatever from will be closed. So do not go into this lightly. Take your time. Set yourself up correctly for the survival of the fry in the long run. Now, that's our quick, nasty episode for this week about breeding fish. Not really nasty, but it's a quick dive into it all. It's a fun process. Don't say I'm not by any person's means saying don't do it. Just set yourself up correctly and make sure that you've got everything right, okay? And even when you think you've got it all right, you won't. We all have extra things that we do along the way. And we learn. Every time I breed fish now, I learn. And I'm sure there is so many people out there who are still learning after 40, 50 years of breeding the same fish. There will be something that they still will learn today. Nothing is ever the same from one breeding to the next. Sometimes you'll have fish in 24 hours that will be perfectly fine to be together. Some fish won't be happy to be together for 3 months or more. Some fish won't get along at all. And unfortunately, during this process, you will lose fish as well. So if it is your favorite pet, don't breed him. Don't breed herd. Keep them as a pet as much as we all want to see the outcomes of whatever it is. Keep them as a pet. Now, in next episode, I might go into colour and fin expectation types. We'll see. We'll see where we're up to. But we'll go from there. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And I am Brad, your host. This is Better Vibes, and we'll chat next time.